Hi, this is TJ Murphy, editor-in-chief of Lava Magazine. Thanks for joining us today. We have the honor of talking with the great Heather Jackson, one of the top American female triathletes in the world, who had a terrific Kona last year. Heather, thanks for joining us. You finished third, and it looked like you had as much fun crossing the finish line as we did watching you do that. Is it sort of sunk in that, because when you're top three, that means, you know, you're in contact with actually winning the race. It's got to be a big mental deal. And how was that experience, and how has it kind of sunk in, and where are you at with that now?
Yeah.
Big question.
thanks for having me on today.
Sure, Heather.
Yeah, for sure. A dream come true last year. It didn't really sink in for a while after that I had made top three in Kona, for sure. The goal was to try to back up my fifth from the year prior, and I went in like, okay, top 10 would be amazing. Top 10 is always, you know, incredible at a world championships, but if I could back up a top five, and so top three was just an absolute dream come true for me. it didn't really sink in, I guess, until maybe a few months later, and now actually coming into, I guess, the big Kona focus and block, it has really sunk in, because now it's almost like there's not more pressure, but it's like, well, you did that last year, what can you do this year? So
it's
definitely in my face now.
in my experience having the opportunity to interview folks like yourself who are really good at this sport, it's always seemed like, when you really get to that top percentile, and I assume, you know what, this probably applies to every sport, and you've got a pretty broad background, everything from hockey to track cycling to triathlon, but at that very top level, the fitness and talent is pretty close among the competitors. But there's something about that psychological part of it, and to actually, I haven't done it, obviously, but to do that well in a race of that magnitude has to have quite an impact psychologically. Like, wait a minute, I can maybe win this sucker, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think, obviously when you have good results, it boosts the confidence that what you're doing is, you know, helping you progress and you're in the right direction. And, like for me, it's like, okay, just keep doing what you're doing. And for me in triathlon the past 8-9 years has just been, that progression. Okay. Just keep, this is working and keep progressing. And then on the psychological side, it's trying to, draw confidence from those results. And I've been trying to work on that. I don't necessarily, I guess, have the most confidence with that stuff, but trying to, okay, you have done this. You deserve to be up there, just drawing from those experiences. Cause it is a big, mental part of it on come race day. So that's just as important, I think, as how fit you are. I mean, everyone there is within tiny percentages of each other when it comes to the physical side, and it's who can perform on the day. So,
and am I right now? As far as the coaches you work with, you've been working with Joe Gambles this year, is that right?
Yep, I've been working. This is my second year with Joe, so I started with him at the start of last year.
Okay.
This second year with Joe, who he has also qualified this year, so he was just there supporting.
That's unusual.
last year. This year he'll be out there as well, which will be fun.
and that kind of brings me to this, and you touched upon it, that this, we're getting into that time of year, and I think one of the things that you've got going for you is, as I think you wrote in your blog, you got your Ironman, your seasonal Ironman out of the way with a really strong performance at Ironman Boulder, where you and Rachel Joyce duked it out. So that gives you a little bit more time to kind of recover, which, you know, it's, and that's one of the reasons I'm really kind of excited to talk to you from a training perspective. But this art of recovery thing makes such a big difference in being able to perform really well at the top. And is that kind of why you plotted Ironman Boulder? Like, that was a target race for you? Is that part of your thinking in terms of laying out the season along with your coach?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was, just trying to tick that box a little bit earlier than the year before. Last year, I raced Placid, which was a goal race of mine from getting into the sport. That's where I grew up playing hockey and trained with the national team there every summer. And it was one of those events that I targeted from the moment they announced it was going to have a women's pro field. And I kind of think I wanted to win that one so bad. And I went in all in, and last July had a great day there. And I think it almost took a little bit out of me in terms of recovering from such a big day. And I was pretty thrashed most of August coming back. And so I had fine prep coming into Kona, obviously had a great day in October, but it was maybe only a 4 or 5 week block leading in. I wanted this year to try to get that done earlier and have more of August and September leading in just to focus in. So yeah, it was okay. Which Ironmans are earlier than that late July slot? Because originally I was looking at Canada. I had heard that that's an incredible race as well. And so I was like, oh, that could be good. But again, it's the same timing. So really it was in the U.S., which is really where most of my sponsors are based out of. It minimizes travel. I tend to race at home a lot just to take out some of those other X factors, getting sick abroad, it's pretty calculated that way, and
not to interrupt you, but could you imagine doing the ITU thing where those guys are just going back and forth to the airport and flying all over the world? Probably not.
No. And those athletes, I give them so much credit. I mean, they grew up doing that. I think mostly it's probably not non-American. They grew up just traveling around and just know how to do it, and I didn't, and I got into the sport late, and I'm very much a homebody, and I like my own bed, and the food I know. And so, when it comes to my career in racing, I pick those races that I know, okay, I'm going to eat the same thing, I'm going to drive, ideally do the race, not get on a plane, not surround myself by people that could be sick. And so, that goes into a lot of my racing decisions, and
That was a big thing for Peter Reed too. He really calculated the impact of maybe a sponsor wanting to fly to New York for some special event, and he was like, he just knew that getting on a plane and crossing a bunch of time zones, staying in a place trying to figure out some training while they're there, and getting back, you can only do so much of that until there's a deleterious effect that you can't ignore, right?
No, I mean, honestly, I have a bad night of sleep. I get, 7 hours instead of 9 or 10, and I'm a mess. Lottie will attest to that. And it's, traveling even just a few times, I'm just, I don't adjust well, and I'm sure it's a skill you can learn and you can work on, and people practice or they just get used to it, and I just know I'm not. And so when it comes to picking where I think I can have better performances, then I take all that for sure. That basically left Texas or Boulder in terms of the U.S. based races, and I just, Texas does not appeal to me. I won't go to that race. left Boulder, and it was good because Joe was based there, so I viewed it as a race I wanted to go in and try to win, but it was also more just an opportunity to get some time training with Joe and get his coaching one-on-one while I was there because we went out about a month early just to try to acclimate and get used to the altitude, which was obviously the big downfall to that race. It was the one thing I was pretty worried about because altitude definitely affects me a lot. And so it was either you fly in like the night before or we're going to make a go of this and commit to a month early. And fortunately, we had some good friends whose house was open, so they let us use their home, and nice. It was great location, great setup. I could train with Joe and just kind of prep for that race and then tick the box in terms of getting that done early in June. So
yeah,
it was definitely calculated picking that one, but yeah, so now I've been able to recover June into July, and
perfect.
I'm basically, yeah, I'm already starting that building back, and I'm in a completely different place than I was last year this time. But it's definitely interesting for me. It's, I'm excited about it. We'll see how that
pans out
in 10 weeks.
Yes, that can be a long time, right? But the you know, one of the things that you're doing, and I noticed it on your blog, but you are, I assume it's daily, but you're measuring oxygen saturation in the blood to kind of like give you an idea of how you're recovering from your training. It's something I've written about some in Lava. And I, as we were talking about offline, I think one of the things I like about that as a recovery tool is it gives you kind of some objective data as compared to just like sort of trying to judge whether you're tired or not, or, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, how do I feel kind of thing. But you actually wake up, you put on the measuring device. I think you use the Masimo. Is that what it's called?
Yep, the Mighty Set.
The Mighty Set, Mighty right. Set. And it actually gives you a reading of, so could you explain in general terms, or scientific terms, however deep you want to go, but what is oxygen saturation, and what is that number, that percentage, telling you about how you're recovering from your workouts?
Yeah, definitely. Your oxygen saturation is just really how well your blood is able to carry oxygen to your cells. And so the higher the number, that obviously 100% is the highest you can go.
And you got a picture of 100% on your blog, I noticed. So at one point, and maybe that was before Boulder, but you were there apparently.
Wow. I think that picture is one of the first ones I ever saw. And it was when I really actually truly was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, it's not just this little thing you put on your finger and it's, you can like take it or leave it. It was this big kind of breakthrough for me. I had been tracking my oxygen saturation for a few weeks, and I was every morning. The great thing about the Mighty Set is it's literally just sitting by my bed. So I can wake up, you slide it on your finger, and it takes about, you know, 20, 30 seconds, and it's giving you a reading. So it's the easiest thing ever. And you have actual data just right in front of you immediately. So you can wake up in the morning, and usually I'll wake up and it's like 95-96% oxygen saturation. And so that's pretty standard for me here in Bend. We're at about 3,800 feet here.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Did you use it when you went to Boulder? Did you see like the numbers get all wacky on you when you first went to a higher altitude?
Yeah, totally. So usually here in Bend, it's 95-96. In Boulder, it was 93-94 when we first got there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It never really, I don't think I ever saw a 100 up there. Again, which may have contributed, but I mean, you're racing at altitude.
Sure.
I didn't feel good the entire day. You're just,
You're
working at a whole different level. You're not getting that oxygen to your cells. So for me, I raced at, say, an Ironman level, an Ironman pacing pace, and to me the entire day felt like it was like a half Ironman race. You just feel struggle a bit more.
Sure. I was living in San Francisco, and occasionally I go to Boulder, and at day one I'm like, I had to walk up a flight of steps, and I was just what just hit me.
It was, oh man. But yeah, I mean, it was great to have that there in Boulder, because These devices are actually used a lot with if someone, say, were to get an altitude tent. It comes with it because when you sleep in an altitude tent at night and you take a reading in there, a lot of times the reading will be super low, like 87%, 88%, and you sleep at that. But then when you get out of the tent, all of a sudden the saturation goes up.
Fascinating.
But now this device is just, you can use it all the time. So it's great for me for, say that boulder block, I was able to really monitor those levels. And then it's just good too on a day-to-day basis to see if you're really, really tired, then one, your oxygen saturation is going to be low. And that when I'm in a big block and I wake up and instead of that 95, 96 is down to 93, then I know...
Yeah.
I'm not just feeling tired. My body really is
showing
that data. So, and then usually also my heart rate. When I wake up in the morning, it's usually pretty low. It's anywhere from 39 to 42, 43. And when I wake up and it's, in the 50s or 60s, I know I didn't recover through the night. It's not just me feeling tired and not wanting to go train. I really am. So it's just good for that support, I guess, that kind of backing you.
Yeah, and I believe you're friends with Dotsy Bosch, who silver medalist and track cyclist, and I remember talking with her about it to some degree as well, and that when she finally kind of learned to trust, because it's interesting, it's our tendency as endurance athletes, if we see our performance drop or whatever, I got to work harder, I got to train more. I got to either up the volume or intensity, which can sometimes be the exact opposite of what you really need. And to get some, anyways, Dotsy sort of told me that when she, I think perhaps it was her coach was had her using it, but when she finally began to trust it, that then she began to religiously trust it because she knew it was actually helping her by
dialing things down
if she needed to. Right.
I'm not sure if you saw the documentary they did on their lead up to the Olympics, Personal Gold. It's on. Did you see that?
I have not seen that. No.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Huh. You should, or anyone should check it out.
Is that like a Netflix thing?
It's on Netflix now. Okay. Yeah.
I'll put it in the show notes. Great.
Yeah, it's everything they did. And one, she obviously was using her Mighty Set every day, all day, just constantly checking in, because track cycling is such a, it's such a very specific thing of when you're doing your efforts and your training. And but it's all the other little things they were doing as well, just in terms of every little possible thing to get them to try for that gold on that one day. I mean, women's team pursuit, it's like 3 minutes, 20 seconds or under that, 3:17, I think. Like, it's so crazy. I mean, we are Ironman triathletes are preparing for a 9+ hour day, and they literally have 3 minutes to leave everything out there. And
there's not much room for error.
Yeah, but they're just, from their bedroom setting up, they literally took everything out of their bedrooms, just blacked out the entire room, blackout drapes and no windows. They had their beds set at certain temperatures with like cooling pads and ice underneath it, just for ideal sleeping temperatures, just every little thing you can do.
So that sort of optimal hormonal regulation thing, and so that they're, when they're on the starting line, in other words, they're not checking out the local brew pubs the night before the race.
Yes, exactly. Unfortunately,
right. last week I actually interviewed Jason Koop, who's an ultra running coach, and he's worked with some of the best ultra runners in the country, including the Western States record holder, Tim Olson. And it was really fascinating to talk to him, because all he could talk about was rest and the importance of rest. And, you know, the alternating mindset is, you know, if you go back, I'm sure there's still a lot of alternators that do this, but if you go back 15, 20 years, I mean, all the best were running 160 miles a week or more. And like Ann Trason was like that, but and she obviously did really well, but at the same time, she might have been a kind of a genetic exception that could handle that sort of stuff. But his main point for most of us, it's really kind of, you know, you put in the hard training, fantastic, but how can you optimize absorbing that? And boy, okay, so that the name of that documentary again on Dotsy, what's that?
Personal Gold.
Personal Gold. Okay. And also along the lines, and I'm asking this on behalf of myself, if you don't mind. I've got all these. I'm pretty beat up. I'm an older triathlete runner guy, and now with two kids, so that just makes it all the harder. But so I've got all these joint problems, and someone like yourself who has been on this, as you mentioned earlier, this 8 or 9 year progression, which is enormous. I mean, that's the way it should be, but very, very few of us are able to do that well. And I guess that speaks to your discipline. I'm really become curious about using electrical muscle stimulation, which has been around for a long, long time, but I think it's got a lot more notice lately in terms of being a recovery tool. Again, one that's kind of simple to use. You don't have to go to the physical therapy clinic. You can use it at home. And it's kind of like, and I think you use a Mark Pro unit, but so it's kind of like a main unit, and it's got some wires, and it's got these electrode patches, and let's say you really exhausted yourself, and your quads are really exhausted from a particular bike session or something like that. And you just put the patches on your legs and kick back for an hour or half hour or whatever. And it's like a blood flow thing. Perhaps it's also increases the lymphatic system's efforts to kind of help you recover. I'm just curious again, yeah. Like what have you learned about using it? How to use it well, not to have you reveal any top secrets, but what can you tell us?
Yeah, no, for sure. The Mark Pro, actually, I was using it. I forget how we got a unit. I think a friend of ours sent one who worked for Mark Pro. Just literally, I wasn't sponsored anything. It was just, here, try it out and see. And it was one of those things where I actually did notice a difference, and I just started using it regularly before there was any sort of formal relationship with them. And it was more for me, just I put the unit on it again. It's similar to the Massimo. It's one of those things for me. I'm always like, what am I doing? Everything I can. And you know, after I'm done training, most days I'm on the couch for an hour or two before we eat dinner, or mm-hmm. I'm rolling, you know, foam rolling, trigger point rolling on the trigger point balls. I could do so much of that.
Wow.
And then maybe I'm on the couch for, you know, an hour or two. And I would put the Mark Pro on, and for me it was my calves get pretty tight mm-hmm. Regularly from running. And you have two pads for each outlet, so four total, I guess. But right. You can put, say, one on the bottom of your foot, if, say, your planta gets tight, or and then one on your calf. Or you can put one up, higher up on your quad, and then one on the bottom of your foot. Basically, it's just generating
a current
blood flow from the two points. And so you can you can even put it up on your hip, like where your hip flexor is, and bottom of your foot. And that's basically, yeah, generating better blood flow through that entire leg.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mark Pro is meant to just do that. It helps recovery in that sense. You're not like stimulating the muscles or putting them through even more work. It's meant for the recovery. And that first time I did it, it's also, I think a lot of people are like, when I show friends or put it on my sister or something, and I'm like, yeah, and everyone wants to crank it up and put it as high as it goes and think that it's like, the higher the...
That's the intuitive thing. It's like, okay, what can I handle here?
But it's not. I usually have it pretty low, and it's just you don't even notice it after, say, 10 minutes. And it's just kind of, yeah. And I fell asleep that first time, I think, on the couch. And I woke up and noticed how much better my legs felt from after that run that day. So it was one of those, like, again, just truly noticed and started using it. And it's also good for, I use it a lot on recovery days where I might have just a swim. So I'll get up, go swim, and then the rest of the day is meant to, yeah, be recovering and getting ready for the next big days ahead. And so when you aren't necessarily doing anything that day and you might feel like you're going to get sluggish or you're just sitting on the couch all day, again, it just helps that blood flow while you're not actually taxing your body out training. It just kind of keeps me feeling like the body's moving, but I'm not actually getting tired training.
Yeah, it's that's what the way Kelly Starrett, the mobility guru, had kind of described it to me. It's like, you know, we have so many things we got to do in the day, and especially a triathlete. If you can take out, for example, like maybe the ideal way to recover post-workout is a massive warm down, really at low intensity. But if you can kind of replicate that to a high degree and actually really relax as opposed to, more effort, that's a big win. And along the lines, if you don't mind me asking, again, I'm sensitive that, you know, top pros don't want to talk about the specifics of their training. You're still like on this upswing of getting better every year. And, I become curious, like there's an impulse, especially when you're doing well and you do well at something like the Ironman World Championship or 70.3 Worlds, things that you've done well at, that you look at how you trained and you think, well, you know what? What if I make my long runs longer? What if I make my long bikes longer? And then, I recall this, Scott Molina, one of the original big four triathletes of the 80s, and he won like 110 triathlons in his career. And for a while he was living and training in Boulder, and he did some of his running with Rob DiCostello, a great Australian marathoner. And that entailed two long runs per week. So we would have like a 20 miler and then a 24 miler, things like that, weekly basis. And, you know, it just seems like in the last 10 years, there's been this, and from guys like Dave Scott talk about this a lot, like changing things. So, well, let's be more focused about what we're doing. Let's get more out of, you know, kind of a less is more thing, really smart long workouts as opposed to just more long workouts or longer long workouts. Can you comment on that? Like advice you might have for the age grouper that you're talking to, who might have questions, like what do you generally think is a smart approach toward that kind of stuff? Sorry.
Yeah, totally. No, I mean, it's funny when people ask me about my training, because I still feel like I'm like learning the sport. And even though now I realize I've been in it longer now, it's crazy to me. I feel like I just got into it, where it is that, yeah, I think that's probably, especially the endurance athlete, it's always more, more, more. If I only do more, then I'll be even better.
Sure.
For me, I guess, knock on wood, that there are, I mean, injury is part of the sport, but that I don't go through what I went through in 2014. I wasn't doing that, adding more, but it was definitely more mileage and maybe too quickly. And I ended up with a sacral stress fracture. So that was, it's been 3 years now, going on four, but it's still like so clear in my head. I remember that, going through that. And so for me, I think I came out of that being an even more conservative athlete in terms of the mileage. And also just kind of being in the sport and seeing that, I don't know, I'm not a believer, not a believer, but that more in terms of like longer, like those, yes, super long runs, or even if I run even longer than, or an over distance run, or we're training for a marathon, I guess, like, yeah, those 24 mile runs or 25, 26 mile runs. I guess I see mentally how that will give you confidence. You're like, oh, I've already done this. Now I'm going to go do the same thing on race day. I do a lot of broken runs, so double run days.
Oh, yeah, yeah. McKinley Jones used to do that, right.
A longer one in the morning, but it's still, you're not getting to the point in, say, a 2.5, 3-hour run where you're going to start risking your form, and that's where you get injured because your form starts to break down. Maybe you're landing back further than you normally do, or you start landing on your foot different than you would because you're just tired and you're fatigued. And so all of a sudden you have, you know, a broken bone in your foot, or just getting to that point where you are going to get injured, versus drawing confidence from, okay, a really solid 90-minute or 2-hour run in the morning, and then a second one later after you've recovered and you're back and you can run it well with good form and you're still getting the same mileage in. And for me too, I think it's just a personal preference as an athlete. If I could race just short distance or I guess training wise, like I'm an athlete that loves those. I'd rather have, you know, a 75-minute run with 800s in it, or, you know, 10 by 1K efforts where you're going hard and going out, and I'm like going as hard as I can, working that speed, working that. And for me, that's just a personal thing. I love those. I don't like the long slogging workouts.
Yeah.
I could never be an ultra runner. I don't know. It doesn't appeal to me. And I don't know if that's just a blessing in disguise because I'm not craving, I just want to do a 3-hour run so it'll.
There's a, I've been there, and I, you can kind of get a buzz off of it, but to your point, I think you actually add some fun to your workouts if it's got that component of racing yourself, be it, you know, 10 times a K or whatever, and it goes by quicker, you know, right? It goes by quicker, all of a sudden it's over.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's been, I do have those long runs, but my long runs are, they're just easy aerobic, all my long runs, 2, 2.5-hour runs. So those for me are just like, okay, we're just going out to run. It doesn't have that excitement for me of, say, the efforts. But I think, for the people that are craving that more is better, it's just, you have to be so smart with it, because if you all of a sudden just jump up or in mileage or jump up in that distance, it's risky for sure. And for me, I learned a lesson very quickly with that. So I guess it's a blessing in disguise, because now ever since I've just been so cautious.
So it sounds like you're still having fun with it all. You still sound really excited about the sport. Is that a fair interpretation?
Yeah, I think, it's been, for me, I'm still getting, like, part of the switch to Joe. It was a new coach last year, I think. If you can keep it exciting and fresh and staying motivated, for me, I'm still getting, like, new workouts every week that I'm like, whoa, here's a new one, or a new challenge today. Try to hit these numbers on the bike, or try to get through this workout in the water.
Cool.
I think that's been key for me, is just keeping things fresh, keeping it, you want to get out the door and go try this this workout or work towards this.
See what you can do.
I think sometimes, you can get into maybe like a bit of a grind, and then you start to lose motivation. And I think I've been able to keep that. So, and for me, it's also, again, I've only been in it, not only now, again, I keep saying that, I didn't grow up doing this sport, so it is still, somewhat fresh.
It's so funny. Like, one of my favorite stories about you is that you kind of tripped into this sport. I mean, you'd always been athletic, and you didn't you play hockey at Princeton? Is that right? And then I don't know. You're like, and you're teaching English in Malaysia or something like that, and you're like bumping to somebody, hey, let's go, you want to go train for an Ironman with us?
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty great.
I didn't even know what it was.
Fantastic. Well, Heather, I promised myself I wouldn't take up too much of your time because we're that time of the year where, it's time to get your blinders on and go. But thank you so much for talking with us. Good luck with your buildup and keep having fun. And we'll be looking forward to watching your race in October.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Heather.
Thanks.